طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. And this is your host, John Roberts. This morning's entire program consists of my interview with Mohammed Sawaha, director of the Palestinian House of Friendship, situated in Nablus in the West Bank of Palestine. The interview took place in Cambridge this past week. Mohammed, thank you for agreeing to speak with us on This Week in Palestine. You have come to the Cambridge-Boston area from Nablus in the West Bank of Palestine to speak about your work with the Palestinian House of Friendship and hopefully raise some money to support its vital program. And it should also be said that you have been here several times before and over that time have developed somewhat of a network of support here and in the Northampton area, as well as many friends. So, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, and again, I'm very happy to be here in the States with friends. I've been to New York, I'm now in Cambridge, and as you said, I'm going to Northampton. I'm with friends whom I know for a long time. Some of them came to Palestine and to Nablus, and they have witnessed in their own eyes the situation in Nablus and in Palestine. I think you said it. How is the life of people of Nablus and the Palestinians under occupation? Well, this is really the main issue. It is the occupation. And living under occupation is not really an easy issue because occupation, it means for us and for everyone confiscation of freedom, confiscation of free movement, confiscation of your land, confiscation and taking your water and everything like that. So when we talk about how is the life, really the life is not easy. We Palestinians, we were very very happy to witness that there could be a peaceful solution in Palestine, and this is why we supported negotiation, believing that that could bring two states for two peoples, both of them free, secure, and all of this stuff. But people discovered that that kind of peace that they were longing for has not been achieved because the occupation continued to be there, continued to be in Nablus, in all the Palestinian cities, and in the West Bank. People in the time that they thought that they could prepare themselves for a transition towards a coming and evolving state, they found themselves that their land is being lost from them, and here I mean the expansion of the settlements, and that was with the let me see a purposeful from the part of the Israeli government, which means that encouraged the settlements on the expenses of Palestinian land. So people started to believe that this is not the peace really that they wanted. The Palestinian land, let me tell you something really, maybe not all the people know. The Palestinian land after the Oslo Agreement was divided into three areas, and these three areas are known: Area A, Area B, and Area C. Which means that the Palestinian land was divided geographically into three areas. And if you are in Area A, so you are a Palestinian citizen that you have to behave according to an Area A where the Palestinian Authority is there. And in Area B, administratively, the Palestinian Authority is there, but on security basis, it is the Israelis who are there. And in Area C, which is about 80% of the whole West Bank, it is under the control of Israel. So if you are a person who wants to move, let's say, from Nablus to Ramallah, these two Palestinian cities, you have to behave as a person who is divided even inside psychologically into three personalities. So you, when you are in Nablus, you have to be, you are a citizen of Area A, but when you cross the checkpoint of Hawara, which is really a very a military checkpoint that Palestinians, when they go out, when they come in, they have to go through, and you could be stopped by Israeli soldiers, and you need to show sometimes your identification and all of these things. So at that time, you have to behave as a citizen of Area C, because you jump quickly from Area A into Area C. So when people found themselves under this situation, really, that caused them not to feel happy about what's how things are just developing, and this is not really the peace that they wanted. Let me also just talk about certain things related to our daily life. If I want to talk about water, we don't have enough water in the city of Nablus. We have water for 2 times a week, and we have to pump water into some tanks at the top of our houses. And if it is finished, you are in a real problem. At the same time, most of the water now is pumped and is taken by the Israeli settlers who live in the West Bank. Every house in these settlements has a swimming pool where right. Yeah, where you where they enjoy all these things. So let me say that that reflects, of course, itself on every aspect of our life. I mean continuity of the occupation. It affects our economic life. It affects the educational life. It affects the social life. Sometimes people who got married from one place to another place, they have to be stopped sometimes by checkpoints. So sometimes you have to cancel a wedding party because there is a checkpoint. Sometimes you cannot reach your university or your school easily just because there is a checkpoint. And
and often you don't know, they have these mobile checkpoints, so that on a given day you may not know how many checkpoints you may have to go through.
That's right. So every morning a student wants to come to a Najah university, and if he has an exam, let's say at 8 o'clock for his first class, sometimes he wouldn't be able to reach until 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, and he would just come and see, all right, there is a checkpoint. And of course, this usually happens so often. So the life really in Palestine and in the city of Nablus, and when I say in the city of Nablus, I can just generalize it on most of the cities in the West Bank and in most of the villages, that you cannot run a very peaceful, usual, let's say, life. You have always to be concerned about everything. You have to concern about your family members when they sometimes stay till late hours at night, because let me tell you that Israelis, for example, in the city of Nablus, very often they come at night into the city of Nablus. They can come and they can arrest anyone, although Nablus, it is according to the agreement between the authority and between Palestinian Authority and Israel. It is, as I said, it is an Area A, which means under the control of the Palestinian Authority. But you can see soldiers coming at night, looking at your home, searching and detaining, arresting anyone who likes, and without paying attention. So let me say, or let me tell you that people, they don't they don't believe that occupation has ended. Occupation is there. It is still. And what is you know, what maybe the whole people understand that Palestinians that got their freedom, and that is a fake thing. That's not true. It is, you know, Israelis are there, and every aspect in our life really is affected by this occupation.
Yeah, and control by it. Okay, well, and in the face of this, in the face of these conditions, you started the Palestinian House of Friendship. Tell us about its origin and what you're trying to do with it, and how it's going.
Well, the idea of starting this non-governmental organization, it came also as a result of our expectation of building an independent democratic state in Palestine. So when the negotiation started between the PLO and between Israel, a group of people started to think, what are the duties of us as Palestinians towards the new political developments in the area. And this is what we thought, it's better just to start an organization that could work with Palestinians and to prepare them for their civic life after the independence. Because what most of the Palestinians, and we of course among them, what we thought that the result of this negotiation should be and would be a Palestinian independent state. So we thought that we are going to have our own institutions, our own elected organizations and institutions, like for example the parliament, because one of the requirements is just to have elections and to build our own parliament and to elect our representatives in this parliament. So we thought that one of the duties is that we have to prepare our community for this coming development, and how to teach them in choosing their representatives. We started programs on civic education. We recruited hundreds of people to work with us in order to prepare for these. We did many let's see, activities, workshops in different cities in the West Bank, in different villages, and in refugee camps, telling people about what are the requirements for a good representative in the parliament. Because choosing these representatives would really result in, let's say, determining the kinds of bills, the kinds of laws that are going to determine the Palestinian life. So we thought of having a certain responsibility towards the community. So the main goal, it was to have some kind of civic education to reach people. And when I say reach people, we were able to reach workers in their in their factories, in their places of business. We reached academics in universities and in schools. We reached even women in their homes. We did a very great job at that time in order really to prepare our community for that. That was the main goal of the Palestinian House of Friendship. But as I mentioned before, when the Palestinians discovered that the peace and the agreement that they were longing to see happening that could result in having an independent state, when they saw that was not the thing that they dreamt of, the people, they become frustrated.
Right.
The Palestinian people become frustrated as a result of seeing that nothing has changed on the ground. On the contrary, their land has been taken from them. No free movement on the ground, and the presence of the Israeli soldiers still to be available. So people, right, found themselves that, as if I say that, they are fooled of what had happened.
So the promise of Oslo was betrayed.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And this what led for the second intifada in the Palestinian land. It's not just it's not because the Palestinians really resort and like the intifada, but because really they fed up from those really fake promises, and they found that the occupation is still there and nothing has happened. So this is why the Palestinian at least showed their resentment, and they showed that dissatisfaction of what was happening at that time. After that, of course, the Israelis came back to, at the beginning of the second intifada, they came back to the Palestinian cities and so on, and they destroyed, of course, the whole infrastructure in the Palestinian cities. So we started to think about that our role in the Palestinian House of Friendship is to take care of people, is to take care of the young men, is to take care of children, more than just paying attention on our first mission of taking of civic education and all of these things. So we thought we had a shift in in our philosophy, in that the most important thing now is the human being, is the younger generation, the children who are now affected badly with what was going at that time. So our concern was about taking care of kids, and we started putting certain programs for kids in order just to take care of them, to make their life much easier, to meet their their needs, and even to entertain them in front of all the pressures that they live under. To be frank, the younger generation in Palestine, and mostly the kids, are suffering these days from a great number of frustration that they live. And all of that, it's because of the political situation, it's because of the occupation. When you talk about the economic situation, really is very bad. The unemployment rate in Palestine is very high, and that reflects itself on the life of people, on the social life. Families are not able to meet the needs of their sons and so on. So that reflects itself badly on their education, on their health, and on their psychology. So we found, or we as a Palestinian House of Friendship, we are, I'm not talking about that we are a very big organization, we are a small organization, but we diagnose that it's very good now to reach these people and to involve them in activities like summer camps, inviting them to our to our center, doing some educational, musical, dancing activities in order to help them to come out of their pressures.
Because there's a, I imagine that the lack of opportunity, that is, kids are growing up, it's a highly educated population, but they don't see a future. Is that a problem with the...
Yeah, I think that's right. If I teach at the university, mm-hmm. Al-Najah University in Nablus, and every year we have an increasing number of graduates, mm-hmm. and these people, when they graduate, they don't have any opportunity to have a job. That really puts them under great frustration and and despair. These people were expecting, at least by having, let's say, an authority they consider that having, believing to have a state that could really save them, that could give them the opportunity, as I said, to have some jobs, but they don't find, or that is not really happening. So the number of unemployment now among these graduate students is very high, easily just because, as I said, our economy is not independent. It is completely related and connected to the Israeli economy. The income in the Palestinian land is very low in comparison, of course, to that of Israel. And the
And I understand it sort of affects young men and young women sort of culturally, because it used to be that you got a job, you made some money, and you met someone and wanted to get married, but didn't get married till you had the economic means to get married. And now I understand that a lot of young people aren't marrying or don't feel like in marrying. They don't have the means to begin a family. And so it's not just employment; it's culturally. It has to do with your ability to marry and raise a family and all of those things that young people think about a lot. And
yes, I think we can see that the occupation is affecting every tiny, every small aspect of our life, and I am not exaggerating. When you talk about these young men, these young men have no job opportunities, and when they grow and when they become, for example, in the mid of their 20s and maybe in the 30s, they cannot really think of starting a family. And here you talk about young men and young women, which means that this could cause also some kind of social problems and so on. So the idea is that, yes, the economic situation is very bad, and that reflects itself on every aspect of life. It's not only on the marriage issues, it's not only the social issues, it is psychological, educational, health. The health situation in Palestine also is really very bad. When you go to hospitals, they are not well equipped, and the doctors do not receive good salaries. They're good doctors, they leave the country. It's just because of the bad income that we have in Palestine. Let me talk about the school teachers. School teachers for months and months, they don't have a full salary. Sometimes they get half just half of the salary that they have, just because the authority doesn't have the money. The money, right, that should be taken from the taxes, Israel usually just don't let this money come to the authority, so Israel sometimes stops just giving the money that is right of the Palestinian authority, because they don't like...
That's a means of control.
That's a means of control. Yeah. So they control the Palestinian economy. We don't have freedom of import and export. Everything has to be done through the Israelis, and if the Israelis are not happy with the Palestinians, they would not make it easy for them to do that. Israelis, they want the Palestinians only just to be a consuming market for them, and to make benefit and to make interest out of the Palestinian market. They are not very much concerned of seeing an independent Palestinian economy flourishing. This is the situation, the economic situation, and of course the political situation. Let me say that affects badly every aspect of the Palestinian life.
Yeah. Where do you see your work going? Well, describe the program a little bit. You did a little bit. You do sort of cultural things like dance and...
Well, for the kids, we have more than a program. Some of them are ongoing now, with the cooperation of some international organizations. We are now building a playground in Palestine, in the village of Asir al-Shamaliya. And that is sponsored by our friends here in the States, by an organization called Playground for Palestine. We are going to have some playgrounds, I think, this month, and the next month is going to be installed and structured in a piece of land that is given by the municipality of Asira. In addition to that, we have some contact with an Irish organization. It is called Skate Pal, and their job they are now preparing and building a skateboarding yard.
Oh, nice.
For kids in Asira. They will be there on the 31st of August. A group of volunteers, around 23 volunteers from 8 countries, from here, from the States, Britain, Scotland, Ireland, Turkey, South Korea. They are coming, volunteers to Asira, in order just to build that. That is part of the programs, in order to prepare something for the kids. We are going to build it in a site that is given from the municipality of Asira, but that will serve also other surrounding villages. So we are talking about between 15,000 to 20,000 kids in those villages that who could be benefited from the playground and from the skate yard that's going to be built. Our vision as a Palestinian House of Friendship also is to build in that piece of land a swimming pool for the two genders, for men and women, boys and girls. And we are also planning to build a theater. We are doing our connections with our friends all over the world, here in the States, and this is part of my visit in trying to have some fundraising in order to support these activities easily, just because, as I said, I believe that investing in the human being in Palestine, investing in children, teaching them, giving them hopes and opportunity, teaching them how to be close to their culture, how to be close to their heritage, and how to understand the world, how to understand the other. I think this is one great thing that we like really to do. We want to do that through these activities. Away from politics, I think the political issue is bigger than this, and we don't like to involve ourselves so much in it. But when we take care of this generation, when we take care of kids, we think that we can just build a very good, Palestine, a strong Palestine, because these people or these kids, they are going to be the leaders of the of tomorrow. So taking care of them, emancipating them from all the pressures and the anxieties, subjected them to something good in life that will also free them from all the despair and the pressure that they live, that they see. And I think they see this kind of despair and frustration in the eyes of their parents. So we try to do our best. And here we are talking about a very little number of Palestinian kids. And to be frank, that all the Palestinian kids are now living under this kind of despair and frustration, and all of these things. Other programs that also we do in order to overcome the problems of occupation is a program that we call e-learning, electronic learning. And this is a program we proposed to the Ministry of Education, and they thankfully cooperated with us. And we were supported by an organization called World Vision. They supported us in implementing this program. This program, it is intended to help school children in remote areas who were subjected all the hardships of the checkpoints, where sometimes teachers were not able to reach those villages because of the checkpoints that could prevent teachers from moving freely from one place to another, or from reaching the schools. So we thought of developing this kind of e-learning by using the technology of virtual classes, by using the technology of the internet. We developed a certain program where in cases of curfews, in cases of that teachers are not able to reach their schools, they could reach their students through the technology of the internet.
Do you do training on the computers, or?
Yeah, we did many workshops in, and we taught the school children, and we prepared also the staff how to deal with this technology. And that technology proved that it worked very well, and even it helped even some weak students into developing themselves, because when you have the curriculum electronically available in your computer, so you could look at the material and you could see your teacher, and you could record that on your computer, so you can repeat even the class once, twice, and three times. That also helped in overcoming some even personal problems that students have. some students sometimes are shy to participate in the class. So by giving them this kind of learning, they could do that at home with their parents, so that you know, we measured that and we found that, yes, those even shy students now, they are doing better than before. Another good result from this technology that we use, that in the past most parents used to bring some private teachers to their homes in order to teach their sons, because they are weak in this material or in that material. But by having this technology and being connected with the teacher, and you can record the class, and you can record the whole material. So we also helped those families in just to get rid of these of the teachers to come into their homes and to pay them money for that. So economically, we helped also the parents. And this technology really does not does not cost so much. So maybe at the beginning you become a little bit afraid of technology, but when you come into it, you will yeah. like it, you will love it. And here we rely on that this younger generation really has some kind of love to the internet and technology. So instead of using it just of wasting time, we thought that, okay, let's try to give them this opportunity where they can spend it on their education and improving themselves. And we did a very good project in one of the schools in a village to the eastern part of Nablus that is called Beit Furik. We worked with them for 2 years on this project, and the results were awesome, and they achieved good results in the final exam that we call in Palestine the Tawjihi. That school hit a very good record in that final exams. Another promising project is now we are trying really to establish a studio, a music studio in PHF, and that is really to meet the needs of the younger generation. This younger generation has its own expectations, aspirations, dreams. They like to sing, they like to express themselves. So we want to give them a chance to do that. There is a hip-hop group affiliated to the center. There is a dancing group that we called Adabka in Palestine, in the Palestinian Adabka group. Also, it is affiliated to the center. So we want to give them really an opportunity to develop themselves and to record their music, to record their songs and their lyrics, believing that this would give them a chance really to spread their ideas in their own ways. And I think by listening to the songs of these people, to the younger generation, you could understand the picture in Palestine. Their songs gives you a truthful picture about how this generation now is living, what do they think about what's going on through their words. So any listener who could listen to them, I think he could understand the political, the social, the psychological, everything about this. You will hear in their voices really the tone of frustration, the tone of despair. You will hear in their words the feeling of injustice that they live under. By this project, we want to give them the opportunity to speak out and to record what they want, and even to be connected with the outer world. Mm-hmm. In addition, we want to record also stories in the voices of the old men and women who are now in their 70s and 80s. We want to record this oral literature in Palestine. Many things are now subjected to disappear, and everything in our folklore is subjected to be confiscated and to be stolen in one way or another. We think that there are stories in the mind of this old generation. These stories, they die when they die, when these people die. So we want really, we have a list, and we have a vision of just visiting these people, recording these things, because we think by recording these things in their own voices, that could be translated, that could be put in one way or another as a record of something in the future. I am very much concerned about this, and believe me that what we like to do is to conserve and to keep our folklore, to keep our heritage, because it is targeted. It's not only the land that is stolen from us. It's not only
the
water.
The culture that speaks.
Yes, the culture. And even the food, like falafel, even the mjaddara, even all these simple things. Now we see that they are now on the menus of others.
Being marketed as Israeli products.
As Israeli products.
I know, it's just drugs.
Yes, okay. Yeah. And that is fake, and that should be told to the whole world. Mm. I think this is a very important thing. We are sure that our land, we will stay in our land, but our culture, we have to preserve it in one way or another. And even these minor things, for me, for example, the falafel and the embroidery that our women work on, it is similar to the land, it is similar to all these things. Yeah. We as an organization, we try really to preserve that, and to see how can we let others, our friends all over the world, here in the States and in other different parts of the world, that this is really a Palestinian brand. Mm.
Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Mohammed, thank you. The work is important. It's vital. And I hope you're very successful in your trip here. And we wish you and the Palestinian House of Friendship the very best.
Thank you very much. And my message to the listeners is that we Palestinians are longing for having a peaceful life. We are longing into having our own independent state. We hope to see ourselves as any people in the world. And I want to remind all the people that this is the last occupation that is now all over the world. And we long really to be free from this occupation. Yes. And we want to see our children and our grandchildren really living in peace as any country. And my message really here to President Obama and to the United States, that they since they say that they are a democratic country, we want them really, just really to know that there are people who are under occupation, and there is no justification at all for just keeping this to go for forever. There is a responsibility on the United States. There is a responsibility on the international community. There are many Security Council resolutions and UN resolutions in favor of Palestinians and Palestine. Why the whole world now is just taking care of that? Why?
Mm. Well, we agree. We as Americans need to address our government, which is a major problem here, to work with you to help you achieve those very lofty goals. Thank you very much, Mohammed.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That was an interview with Mohammed Salwaha, founder and director of the Palestinian House of Friendship in Nablus, Palestine. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at wzbc.org. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.